Nikki Strong, and this is VOA 1, The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
On today's program, you will hear reports from Dan Friedel and Dan Novak. Later, Brian Lynn presents this week's technology report. Finally, Katie Weaver and I tell you about the starting point of the famed Route 66, Chicago. But first, here is Dan Friedel.
India became the fourth country to successfully land a spacecraft on the moon on Wednesday. It also became the first country to land a spacecraft near the moon's south pole. Its moon lander, called Chandrayaan-3, touched down near the moon's south pole just after 6 p.m. in India. The landing brought cheers and applause from space scientists who were watching in the control center in the city of Bengaluru. After a failed landing almost 4 years ago, India joined the United States, the Soviet Union, and China as the only countries to send a spacecraft to the moon. This moment is unforgettable. It is phenomenal. This is a victory cry of a new India, said Prime Minister Narendra Modi. India is on the moon, said S. Somanath, the head of the Indian Space Research Organization. The moon's south pole is thought to be an important area for exploration. Scientists believe it has important resources, including frozen water and minerals. Just days earlier, Russia's Luna 25 spacecraft tried to land in the same area, but spun out of control and crashed. It would have been Russia's first moon landing in 47 years. People across India gathered in shops, offices, restaurants, and their homes to watch the landing on television. The name Chandrayaan means mooncraft in the Sanskrit language. The Indian Space Research Organization discussed the mission ahead of the landing. The organization called the possible landing a remarkable milestone, a significant step forward for Indian science, engineering, technology, and industry. The group discussed the sense of pride that comes from the success and suggested it will lead to more innovation from India. The previous landing attempt broke down because of a software problem, according to India's space organization. The moon vehicle will take up to 1 day to come out of the spacecraft and will operate for 2 weeks. It will run experiments on the minerals on the moon's surface, Somanath said. Observers say the successful landing shows India's interest in demonstrating its strength in technology and space exploration. The landing should be an important part of Modi's campaign to keep his government in power leading up to the country's general election in 2024. Many countries want to know about the moon's south pole because it could hold resources that may help future space missions. Other countries and private companies are trying to land there. The Indian landing comes after the failed Russian mission, plus recent crashes by spacecraft from both Japan and Israel. Japan will launch another mission this weekend. Two private U.S. companies have attempts planned by the end of 2023, and the American Space Agency, NASA, hopes to send astronauts to the moon's south pole in coming years. I'm Dan Friedel.
Recent satellite images suggest China is building a military site on disputed land in the South China Sea. The pictures show an airfield structure on Triton Island, a part of the Paracels Island group. China, Taiwan, and Vietnam all claim ownership of Triton. The airfield structure appears to be a long runway toward the east. The company Planet Labs PBC recorded the images in August. The structure is not in pictures gathered in March of this year. The Associated Press news agency studied the satellite photos and reported last week about the runway. The AP said the images showed two large fields marked with Chinese national and political symbols. The island is about 4,000 feet long by 2,000 feet wide and was unpopulated until recently. Bill Conroy is with URSA Space, which provides intelligence analysis. He has a different theory about the structure in the pictures. He says it might be a levee, a structure to protect low land from tidewaters. We're estimating that there's about 70,000 square meters of land that would be reclaimed from the sea by the levee, he said. Experts at the U.S.-based nonprofit Center for Strategic and International Studies said they believe the structure could be a runway, but they suggested it could also be a raised roadway. Ray Powell is director of Stanford University's Sea Light program. It studies Chinese naval strategy. He said the new structure on Triton Island could be both a levee and a roadway once completed. Huang Viet is an expert on South China Sea disputes at the National University of Ho Chi Minh City in Vietnam. He said that if it is an airstrip, Chinese military planes could use the island as a refueling station for actions in the area. The island is of equal distance from Vietnam and China. China has built on other disputed territory in the South China Sea. The structures include seawalls, airfields, and buildings across several islands. China has said such building projects are for scientific research. China has claimed ownership of 90% of the South China Sea. It is one of the busiest waters in the world, with one-third of all shipping traffic. Almost all the countries that border the waters claim territory in the sea, including Brunei, Malaysia, and the Philippines. Speaking to reporters Thursday, the Vietnamese Foreign Ministry spokesperson said all activities in the Paracel Islands conducted without Vietnamese permission are violations of Vietnam's sovereignty. China has finished building military centers on three islands in the Spratly group to support its territorial claims. China says its actions in the South China Sea are aimed at peaceful reunification with Taiwan, which it considers a rebel province. A Taiwanese Foreign Ministry spokesperson said Monday that Taiwan's rights over land and related waters in the area cannot be questioned. I'm Dan Novak.
Major media organizations are calling for new laws to protect their content from use by trainers of artificial intelligence tools. The request for new laws or regulations was contained in an open letter released earlier this month. The leaders of several large news and publishing organizations signed the document. They include officials of the Associated Press, Gannett, and the News Media Alliance, which represents hundreds of media publishers. Representatives from Getty Images, the National Press Photographers Association, and Agence France-Presse also signed the document. The organizations stated their support for the responsible development and deployment of AI systems. One AI tool, known as a chatbot, has demonstrated the ability to produce human-quality writing based on short written commands. Such tools are also known as generative AI or large language models. But the letter also expresses the need to develop regulations to protect the content that powers the increasing number of AI tools in development. Media companies are worried about AI developers using their published content without permission. The media content enjoys copyright protections, and the companies want governments to enact rules to restrict unapproved use of their material. AI developers need huge amounts of data to train systems that aim to produce human-level results. Developers often collect this data from publicly available websites in a process called scraping. The letter states that the process of scraping gives AI developers free use of their media content. They can then use this data to create language models that strengthen their AI tools and businesses. A few media companies have already signed licensing agreements with AI developers to give them permission to scrape their content. Last month, the Associated Press completed a deal with chatbot developer OpenAI to license the news agency's large news story collection. Other news organizations have taken steps designed to block developers from collecting their content. The New York Times, for example, recently changed its terms of service agreement to include new guidelines for AI. The new policy requires AI developers to have written permission to use any of its content to train language models. The policy covers different forms of content, including written text, images, and audio and video material. The open letter also describes another big problem with chatbots and other AI tools: the production of false or misleading information presented as truth. It calls on AI developers to build into their systems tools to prevent such falsehoods. News and media content created by AI tools can distort facts and leave the public with no basis to discern what is true and what is made up, the letter states. It adds that many language models can also produce results that include long-standing biases against minority and underrepresented communities. Many news companies are currently experimenting with generative AI tools. They hope to learn how the tools can best serve the news production process. Several major news organizations announced last month they had teamed up with AI developers to find new tools to help reporters do their work. The AP recently issued new guidelines for the use of AI tools across all departments at the news agency. The guidelines ban the use of such tools to create publishable content and images for the news service, the AP said in a story about its new rules. However, the news agency said that it is also urging its employees to study the technology to learn how its use might improve their work within the rules. I'm Brian Lynn.
Brian Lynn is here now to talk more about this week's technology report. Thanks for joining me today, Brian.
Of course, Ashley. Thanks for having me.
We learned from your report that some media and news organizations are seeking new laws to protect their content from being used to train language models during AI development. Why are these organizations saying they think laws are necessary?
So what they are saying is that laws are the only way to currently get AI developers to seek permission before using their content to create new AI tools. And what is clear is that this kind of content is necessary for developers to keep improving their AI systems. The companies just want to know how their content is being used, and some also want to sign licensing agreements with AI developers so they can be paid for use of their copyrighted material.
We learned in the story that some news organizations have either established new restrictions on AI developers or have completed licensing deals. But it must also be hard for media organizations to enforce such rules, right?
Yes, this is true. Some technology experts have also noted this problem. There are now many AI developers out there, and it could be nearly impossible to know how and by whom a media company's content is being used. It has also been brought up that if more media organizations are successful in restricting the use of their content for AI development, the level of quality of the AI tools themselves is likely to drop sharply.
Okay, thanks again for being here, Brian.
You're welcome. Thank you, Ashley.
VOA Learning English has launched a new program for children. It is called Let's Learn English with Anna. The new course aims to teach children American English through asking and answering questions and experiencing fun situations. For more information, visit our website, learningenglish.voanews.com.
In September of 2015, VOA Learning English traveled along the famous Route 66. the 3,900-kilometer-long highway stretches from Chicago, Illinois, to Los Angeles, California. For the next 2 weeks, you will hear our reports from the road. We tell you about the communities, the people, the food, and the special landmarks that make up the highway that's the best. These stories first aired in late 2015.
Few Americans pay attention to a brown street sign on East Adams Street in downtown Chicago. If you are not looking for it, it is easy to ignore. But every few minutes, a group of international tourists take a picture in front of the sign. It reads, Historic Route, Illinois, US 66, Begin. The sign marks the modern-day starting point of an iconic American journey. The historic U.S. Route 66, the Main Street of America.
Chicago, Chicago, that toddling town. Chicago, Chicago, I will show you around. I love it.
Chicago is the largest city in the U.S. Midwest and the third largest city in the country. It is more famous for its pizza, museums, and skyscrapers than its place in Route 66 history. The 3,900-kilometer Route 66 links two of the biggest cities in the U.S., Chicago, Illinois in the east, and Los Angeles, California in the west. For people traveling Route 66 today, Chicago offers big city fun before beginning the drive through cornfields and small towns in Illinois. Before the Route 66 VOA crew headed west, we took in some of the sights, sounds, and tastes Chicago has to offer.
If you like tall buildings and interesting architecture, Chicago is the city for you. Skyscrapers were born in Chicago. The first one went up in 1885 and was only about 33 meters tall. One of the most famous skyscrapers in Chicago is the Willis Tower. The building is more commonly known by its original name, the Sears Tower. For years, it was the tallest building in the world. It remains one of the tallest buildings in the United States. Completed in 1973, it has 103 stories and stands 527 meters tall. Its observation deck provides amazing views of the city's downtown and beyond. Chicago's downtown is called the Loop. Chicago's train system, the L, circles this part of the city, giving the area its name. L stands for elevated. The train tracks run several meters above Chicago's streets. The public transportation system is a Chicago icon. More than 700,000 people board the trains every weekday. The Loop is also home to one of the largest outdoor sculptures in the world. British artist Anish Kapoor created the 10-ton sculpture, officially named Cloud Gate. The huge metal rounded object is often and affectionately called the Bean. It is a beloved selfie spot because photographers can see themselves in the mirror-like surface of the Bean. One way to end a day of exploring Chicago's museums, parks, and architecture is by eating at one of the city's exceptional pizzerias.
Chicago-style pizza is very different than the pizza from other American cities. It is more cheese than crust. Tomato sauce covers the top of the pizza, and it is truly more of a pie than a typical pizza.
It is served in a deep round plate. In fact, Chicago's pizza is called deep dish pizza. One of the first Chicago-style pizzerias opened in 1943. Two entrepreneurs opened Pizzeria Uno with the goal of creating a uniquely American version of pizza. The history of just who created Chicago deep dish is a bit controversial. Some say the entrepreneurs themselves were the inventors. Others give credit to one very famous Chicago clan. Lou Malnati was one of the original Pizzeria Uno cooks. He claimed that he came up with the Chicago deep dish pizza. He continued to work at Pizzeria Uno for many years without getting the credit he felt he deserved. But in 1971, he and his family took their pizza baking skills and opened their own restaurant. Lou Malnati's pizzeria now has 35 locations throughout Chicago and its suburbs. One of Lou Malnati's downtown locations is a quick walk away from another Chicago institution, Jazz Showcase.
If the Windy City, as Chicago is known, had a soundtrack, the music would have to be jazz and blues. The city is famous for the all-American sounds. Jazz and blues clubs are scattered throughout the town. Jazz Showcase is among the best of them. The historic club opened up in 1947. It is the oldest continuously operating jazz club in Chicago. Some of jazz's greatest musicians have played there, including Count Basie and Art Blakey. On our first night in Chicago, we visited Jazz Showcase. The club was intimate and low-lit. Pictures and murals of famous faces cover the walls. The crowd was warm and friendly, like most everyone in this Midwestern city. The Ari Brown Quartet was performing a free show. The place was packed with jazz enthusiasts. At one point, the lead saxophonist brought up a jazz singer who happened to be in the audience. She shared the stage for a song and received huge applause.
Chicago is not a typical Route 66 city. Aside from the official start and end signs, it can be difficult to find particular Route 66 sites in the city. Our journey west began the next morning. We turned off of Michigan Avenue, Chicago's most famous street, and on to East Adams. Soon, the skyscrapers gave way to the open land and small towns that define Route 66. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Katie Weaver. Join us next week for a report about international tourism along historic Route 66.
That's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak.